MRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Harrisonburg's Housing Authority wants to keep Court Square Theater open. One Stanton family faces the likelihood they will have to leave the country after being denied asylum. And the Trump administration's immigration crackdown costs Virginia thousands in lost tuition. This is the WMRA Daily for Wednesday, December 31st. The Harrisonburg Redevelopment and Housing Authority, HRHA, is exploring options to keep Court Square Theater open. The agency, which owns the portion of the building that houses the theater, said in a news release that a meeting between community leaders from Harrisonburg and Rockingham County led to a decision to continue Court Square's operations in the short term. A public donation portal has been set up on HRHA's website to fund Court Square Theater's operating costs and allow scheduled performances and programming for the first quarter of 2026 to continue uninterrupted. Money raised will also fund community outreach meetings that will allow artists, patrons, and residents to share ideas for the theater's future. The Arts Council of the Valley planned to close Court Square Theater today after their board voted earlier this month to cease operations, citing lower ticket revenue from dwindling attendance and reduced local government funding. Throughout this year, WMRA has followed the story of a young family of four living in Stanton. The father, Ullman, has been detained by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement since June. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee attended his wife's asylum hearing earlier this month, and she and I had this discussion of the outcome. Randy started with the family's background and how they found themselves in legal jeopardy.
Ullman and Layla fled their home country in Central America after facing escalating gang violence that culminated in Ullman being severely burned but surviving. WMRA has agreed to refer to the couple only by his first name and her nickname, and to withhold the name of their home country due to their fears of persecution should they be forced to return. The couple has a 9-year-old daughter who made the journey with them to the U.S., and a 2-year-old daughter who is a U.S. citizen. We previously interviewed Layla through an interpreter about what they endured back home. Earlier this month, we discussed Ullman's virtual hearing before an immigration judge, who ultimately denied his application for withholding of removal, despite the harm he endured and his lack of any criminal record. The couple's attorney appealed that decision, so Ullman's case is ongoing, while he remains incarcerated in the Caroline Detention Facility. On December 11th, Layla appeared before Judge Matthew Gordon in the Sterling Immigration Court for a hearing on her asylum application, which includes her 9-year-old daughter.
And you attended that asylum hearing earlier this month. Can you set that scene for us?
Well, the court in Sterling is in a large brick building set back in a commercial area of the city. Flyers are posted around the interior advocating for self-deportation, touting benefits such as keeping money one has earned in the U.S. and consequences for not leaving, such as possible imprisonment. Layla had come prepared to answer questions about her and Ullman's experiences with the gangs, their attempts to report the violence and extortion to multiple police departments, and the threats they received after Ullman survived the arson attack. But right at the beginning of the hearing, the Department of Homeland Security attorney challenged Layla's entire asylum application with the circumvention of lawful pathways bar. This is a rule first instituted in 2023 that makes non-citizens who cross the border without authorization ineligible for asylum if they didn't cross through an existing lawful process, such as using the CBP-1 mobile application to schedule their entrance. Layla's attorney, Jeffrey Haynes, argued that the Mexican police's extortion of the couple made it non-viable for them to wait and cross the southern border lawfully. Judge Gordon said, "The court certainly has concerns about, quote, whether I'll even be able to reach the merits of your application for asylum, end quote, since the DHS raised that bar." He also expressed concern that documents from Ullman's case were filed in Layla's without her husband signing a waiver of confidentiality. Gordon proceeded to say that he could still consider Layla for withholding of removal, a legal status that prevents one from being deported to their home country but offers less protection than asylum. But under federal law, unlike with asylum, children cannot have a derivative application for withholding of removal under their parents' application. So the judge told Layla that even if she applied for withholding of removal, he would have to order her 9-year-old daughter deported to their home country.
Well, it sounds like that set up a very difficult choice, or maybe no choice at all, for Layla. How did she respond?
Well, the judge offered one alternative, pre-conclusion voluntary departure. That requires a person to withdraw their application for asylum before a judge rules on their case and agree to leave the U.S. The court took an approximately 10-minute recess so Layla could discuss her options with her attorneys. Faced with the possibility of her 9-year-old daughter being forcibly deported without her, and with tears streaming down her face, Layla chose voluntary departure. She returned to the courtroom and, under oath through an interpreter, told the court she would leave. The judge gave Layla the maximum time allowed for voluntary departure, 120 days, meaning she has to leave the country and find somewhere else to go by mid-April, while still trying to get her husband out of ICE detention. As the attorney for DHS left the courtroom, I followed him into the hallway and asked if I could get the spelling of his name, which he refused twice. According to a LinkedIn profile for a Paxton Schwab, which appears to belong to that attorney, he graduated from Georgetown Law earlier this year.
And what did Layla tell you they will do next?
The family is figuring out what to do now, and if there are any other countries that might accept them as migrants or refugees. Their supporters have restarted an online fundraiser they first set up for Ullman's legal fees and the family's rent. I'll continue to follow their case and keep you posted.
Thanks again, Randy, for reporting on this family situation.
Thank you, Bob.
You can find our previous reporting on this family's case and ICE arrests in our area at WMRA.org and on our app. The Trump administration's crackdown on both illegal and legal immigration is costing Virginia money from lost tuition. The Virginia Mercury reports that ongoing federal actions, including visa bans and disruptions to application processing, have led to a projected $23 million revenue loss for the Commonwealth compared to last fall. Virginia received almost $900 million from more than 23,000 international students at its colleges and universities last year. The Association of International Educators says that the uncertainty that international students face and the resulting disruption is especially concerning for smaller cities and towns with universities, such as Harrisonburg and Lexington. The loss of international students is also affecting enrollments at community colleges. The General Assembly will soon consider an initiative that could make solar devices more accessible. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
Some people call it balcony solar. Others call it plug-in solar. The idea is that people would be able to install small solar units at their home without getting a utility interconnection agreement. Delegate Dolores Oates is a Republican from Front Royal who said she started looking into the issue when a constituent asked why some solar devices are not allowed in Virginia. Now she's crafting legislation members of the General Assembly will consider in January.
It's especially good for renters who can't put solar on the roof and be able to gain any kind of benefit from it. So this portable system is a great option for people who live in condominiums and apartments.
Victoria Higgins at the Chesapeake Climate Action Network says distributed energy resources have traditionally been the domain of property owners.
That would be something like rooftop solar, which is a bigger investment and not accessible to everyone. So it's really just in the last maybe decade or so that we have technology that is affordable, where people could, you know, theoretically, if we pass this legislation, just go to Costco or IKEA or something and pick up a couple of these panels.
The issue has bipartisan support, and Governor-elect Abigail Spanberger has identified balcony solar as a top priority for the upcoming General Assembly session. Michael Pope.
Albemarle County Public Schools, ACPS, will get more than $1 million in state funding to set up technology labs in local middle schools. Governor Glenn Youngkin announced on Tuesday the funding as part of more than $6 million in statewide Growth and Opportunity Virginia grants. The funding for Albemarle County, Greene County, and the city of Charlottesville will allow ACPS to establish the first GoTech Career Connection Labs in the region. The labs will introduce students to high-demand skills through modules in IT coding and networking, automation and robotics, precision machining, and other technical and engineering skills. A recent College Board survey found the majority of high schoolers use generative AI tools such as ChatGPT for schoolwork, even though nearly half of American schools restrict its use. As educators struggle to keep pace with AI, one local school system is embracing it. Virginia Public Radio's Christine Cuter explains.
We have a lot of golf carts. Yep, this is my company car.
Educator Kenny Bowens directs career and technical education and innovation at Louisa County Public Schools.
You're also riding with somebody who's legally blind, so I don't know if you're scared or not, but hold on tight.
Jokingly referred to as Louisa County's AI godfather, he's been functionally blind since childhood. His superpower, he says.
And everything that I want to do, I have to figure out a different way to do it. I've always been flexing that muscle since I was a child. So that's kind of like when we talk about AI, it's like I said, I see it unleashing my abilities to do more than I could ever do before. It saves time, it saves energy that I can put other places. So when people say it's killing creativity, I don't see it in that way. I see that it's giving us more tools to be creative with.
Louisa County was the first Virginia district to license school AI for its 500 instructional staff and 5,200 students, a platform that offers lesson planning tools, online workspaces, and learning insights about students. Now in year three of Louisa's AI embrace, Bowens has become a leading voice for the technology, convening regular forums to help teachers, administrators, and community members understand AI's power and place in schools. Bowens pitches AI as a time saver. It can be used to grade student writing, integrate curricular themes, draft parent emails, develop quizzes, and quickly comes up with graphic design. Louisa teachers aren't required to use AI, and many still don't. But
the technology is not going away. It's never gonna, disappear. There's no putting it back in the bottle.
Marcia Flora taught elementary school for 17 years. For the last year, she's taught high schoolers who want to become teachers. Flora uses AI daily, including to create conversational warm-ups with AI chatbots and lesson plan building exercises for her sometimes dubious students.
They're getting better, but even now when we do projects and I say, I've put a space for you, I want you to use AI to help you generate ideas or help make your ideas stronger, they still say, but that's cheating. Isn't that cheating? And I said, well, if you get it to do the entire project for you, then yes, that's cheating. But if you use it as a tool to bounce ideas off of, here's my thoughts, how can I make this better, or be specific about how it can help you, then you're using it to make yourself better as a tool. So I'm trying to, they're coming along. A goal that we've set is to try and change that mindset for them.
Bowens observed that many school districts get bogged down restricting AI, even as many companies expect young workers to arrive AI ready.
Everything we do educationally, I really do believe is important. One of the things I follow that up with is when they graduate high school and they go to college and they go to a job, their employer is not gonna care how they got the job done for the most part. They're just gonna care that they got it done and that they got it done in the most effective way possible. So we create these parameters now where we tell them they can't use it, but the second they go work for any corporation or any business, they're gonna say, why aren't you using AI to do these things? So, we just have to shift a little bit.
Louisa County, which banned cell phones from its campuses in 2010, may be ahead of the curve. Fewer than half of American teachers have had training or professional development related to AI. And just 48% of students say that they've received instruction at school on how to use AI. Reporting from Mineral, I'm Christine Cuter.
Well, finally today, tomorrow, New Year's Day, parking is free at all Virginia State Park locations, and there are nearly 90 guided hikes and other events planned across the Commonwealth. Virginia Public Radio's Roxy Todd has the details.
State parks across the country have been hosting first day hikes every New Year's Day for over a decade. This year in Virginia, there are hikes you can take with your dog, events that feature hot chocolate or soup, and slower nature walks for small children. There are also rigorous hikes and midnight walks on New Year's Eve. Space is limited, and so signing up ahead of time is encouraged. New this year are three guided hikes within Virginia's protected natural areas. Leslie Stark is with the Virginia Natural Heritage Program.
Getting out in nature to see what makes Virginia so special is just a great way to spend time in nature, perhaps with your family or your friends, to maybe start a new tradition, maybe keep going with an old tradition, but why not start on the very first day with a fresh start?
2026 marks the 40th anniversary for the Virginia Natural Heritage Program, which manages 69 preserves across the Commonwealth.
2026 is going to be a big year for us. We're planning to open 3 new public access facilities at our natural area preserves.
Virginia Natural Heritage is leading hikes on New Year's Day in Russell, Franklin, and Stafford counties. 84 other hikes are planned at state parks across the Commonwealth. I'm Roxy Todd.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicki. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy your Wednesday. I'll talk to you next year.